Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got a busy show this week, so we are going to start things off with an interview I did earlier this week with Meredith McGriff, who is the CEO of Hoosier Films, and there is a festival that is happening, the Hoosier Films Annual Festival at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington. That's 114 East Kirkwood Avenue. You can go to hoosierfilms.com/events for the information on this. This is running Thursday, March 24th through Sunday, March 27th. And yours truly is going to be a panelist on Saturday morning at the Buskirk Chumley Theater to talk about film distribution for the press. So shameless plug, your pledge dollars at work. And with that, here is my chat with Meredith McGriff, the CEO of Hoosier Films. Enjoy. Okay, Meredith, before we get into the organization and the festival, where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Muncie, Indiana, so I'm a Hoosier native.
All right. And what was your neighborhood movie house?
Oh, I am going to forget the name of it. We actually, of course, we all went to the AMC. But no, there was a wonderful little theater in downtown Muncie. And I tell you what, I can't for the life of me remember the name right now.
Okay, that's all right. It'll come to you later and you can email me. It's fine.
Sounds good.
Now, what was some of the first films that had an impact on you as a young film goer?
Oh, gosh, that is such a difficult question. I remember seeing things like, you know, my dad actually watched a ton of old black and white movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember seeing, you know, I would sit down with him for an hour in the afternoon and I would watch like an hour of the middle of one of the Thin Man movies. And so they're all just cobbled together in my head as these like classic films, and getting to watch those with him and listening to him reminisce, that was actually probably one of the more impactful aspects of my film watching growing up, was just seeing those old films. I remember watching True Grit with him and just thinking about that little girl's adventure and things like that. So,
I get it. My dad took me to movies as well. I mean, he took me to some kid-oriented stuff, but I think my dad was like, all right, I want to see this, and you know, you can tag along if you want. So there was parental guidance, MPAA. and he was very good at explaining stuff to me if I didn't quite understand it. Was that the same thing with your dad?
To a certain degree, yeah. You know, I feel like a lot of those old films, especially the ones that made it to cable TV, they didn't broach too deeply into a lot of difficult topics. But yeah, it spurred some discussions, you, definitely.
You weren't watching Bergman films with your dad?
No, as a matter of fact.
Why is he playing chess with death? No, I did this happened with me, and I did it with my daughter as well. I was like, please save all questions to the end of the tour. So Meredith, how did tell me, what are the origins for Hoosier Films?
Absolutely. So Hoosier Films is something that my partner Thomas and I started. We're married, and it's a marriage of our skill sets, really. Thomas is a filmmaker. He has been since he was in high school, or probably before, with like family video cameras, I think. He could tell that story better than I could, but he's always been interested in film. He's been a filmmaker his whole life. and has been really interested in being able to make films in Indiana. And I came up through sort of an arts management background, did a degree in folklore studies and a lot of public programming work, and have worked with arts organizations off and on my whole life, really. And so we started talking about how we could support film in Indiana and create some sort of entity that would kind of collect those films and make them available for a broader audience. And so Hoosier Film started out as a streaming service, but we're actually now, we like to think of ourselves as more of a regional distribution service that works on multiple platforms. So we have the streaming service, we have the festival, and now that the pandemic is, we hope, winding down a bit, we're expanding into some theatrical work as well.
That's right. Now, we can't talk about prices because it's public radio, but I know you can go to HoosierFilms.com, correct, to see what is available?
Yes, absolutely. So that would be, that's a great place for all of our offerings. And then festival.HoosierFilms.com is the sort of the home for the festival this year. It's kind of a separate, you know, we separate offerings. We keep the two sites separate, but you can navigate back and forth pretty easily.
Sure. And when did you start with Hoosier Films?
I believe we founded the company in 2018. And then the festival, the first year of the festival was 2020. We had to pivot to virtual at the last minute.
As did a lot of people. Yeah.
Yes.
So how are we keeping, is there an option like the previous where you with live and virtual?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we had so much success with that, and we were so excited to see people from around the nation and even around the world getting to join us online and watch the films that we have kept an online option this year. All of the films can be streamed. It'll be a week-long pass to watch online, and then we'll also be recording the Q&A sessions so that folks can watch those Q&As after the fact, too.
Okay. And what's the policies or criteria as far as submitting your film for budding filmmakers out there?
So we're Indiana-focused, but we keep that pretty broad. We do submissions through Film Freeway, so folks can look at the specifics there. But basically, we want to see films that have a strong Indiana connection. That could be something that is filmed here by Indiana filmmakers. It could be something by somebody who's born and raised here or graduated from school here but is working elsewhere and wants to get their film seen by audiences back home. We love documentaries about Indiana, but we're open to documentaries made by Indiana filmmakers elsewhere. So really there's kind of a broad spectrum of things we're willing to accept, but the focus is on Indiana filmmakers and really getting them some recognition here at home.
And how many films are currently available on the website?
Oh, that I don't actually recall offhand. I want to say we have over 100 right now, but I could be off on that. Thomas would be your contact for all things fine detail. There's over 30 films at the festival and quite a few more on streaming.
So there's got to be something for everybody there. Literally, I mean, in proper use of the word literally.
I think you are absolutely correct. Yeah, we span almost every genre. We've got a little bit of family friendly in there even. Everything you can think of.
Right. And it runs from short films to full length, so you can make your own cinema buffet.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you've got a 15-minute break and you want to watch something fun, you can do that. You want to make an evening of it, you can pull up a feature film or select a genre of shorts. There's really a lot of different options.
And, of course, the festival is happening at the Busker Chumley Theater down in Bloomington. What are the dates on that?
March 24th through 27th.
Okay. And you go to HoosierFilms.com for information on the festival. What's going to happen at this year's festival, besides having some hack from Indianapolis come down and talk?
Well, we're excited about that, too. we've got a slate of four feature films, two full-length features and a pair of featurettes on Saturday. So we've got, it's over 30 films in total. We've got short film blocks all afternoon Friday, short film blocks again all afternoon on Saturday. And for folks who are interested in filmmaking, we've got workshops in the mornings on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we've got an awards luncheon for filmmakers and VIP pass holders on Sunday, which we're really excited to give out some awards to some of these really phenomenal filmmakers. And, yeah, just lots of opportunities for social gatherings and meeting Indiana filmmakers and the Hoosier Films crew, too. Very good.
And what time am I going on?
let's see. What did we...
Friday, I think it's 9:30.
Is that that was the media workshop, right?
Correct. Here's the really smooth, shameless plug portion of the show, friends. That's my wife's coming down with me to make sure I get there on time.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it's always good to have somebody to keep you on schedule, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, that'll be at Buskirk Chumley at 9:30 on Saturday morning. So if you want to come down and talk about film distribution or just throw any questions, I'll more than likely answer them. It'll be fine.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, we're excited. The workshops, you know, we're doing something a little different with those. A lot of times you see filmmakers brought up on stage for workshops, and what we wanted to do is focus on the community aspect and get a bunch of community collaborators from different aspects of the work to talk at these different workshops. So we're thrilled to have you on board. We've got a couple of journalists coming and folks to talk about how to expand your presence in the media. We've got a different day talking about collaborating with local businesses as, you know, filming locations and that sort of thing. And a day that's all about funding your film with folks who've done film funding from all kinds of different perspectives, venture capital, grant making, all kinds of things. So getting some different voices up there and hope filmmakers will really enjoy that opportunity to learn from folks.
And you can find out more at HoosierFilms.com as far as times and locations and all that. So, Meredith, I have to ask, so how long have Thomas and you been married?
Oh, let's see here. I think we're coming up on 8 years this year.
Congratulations.
So currently, it'll be 8 later.
Okay. So what was the first film you two watched together?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know.
Wow. Now starting into the newlywed game, only 8 years, so.
I know. Well, it's been a while. We've been together longer than that. So I know it took him a few years before he showed me his films that he had made.
Really?
I think he was a little nervous about it, but we had been dating a while before he showed me those.
Okay, wait a minute. All right, here we go. So plug your husband's films. What films was he making, and which ones did he show you first?
Oh, he showed me first a silent film from his college days.
Oh, boy.
It was really fun. Black and white, you know, some assignment from film school. What he's made most recently, though, which is fantastic, and even our kids love it, is The Encounter, which is an animated short film, and he's currently turning that into a feature film. So that's up on Hoosier Films. I encourage everybody to watch it. It's a really sweet short film, and I think it's going to be a phenomenal feature.
Now, was he afraid it might be a deal breaker, or just was shy about sharing it with you?
Oh, I think he was just shy. I'm going to embarrass him by saying this, I think.
Don't worry. If he sees me in Bloomington, I'll have him on the show so we can have counterpoint. It's all right.
I think that's a great idea. Absolutely. he does a whole different side of this work that I don't do. I'm not a filmmaker myself, so I'm sure he'd love to talk with you.
Okay. So, well, let's shift slightly a little bit instead of maybe the first film, but what were some of the early films that he had to show you? I'm a guy and a film nut. I know this feeling. What did he have to share with you?
Oh boy. That's a very good question. You know, I believe there were at least a couple of Charlie Chaplin films.
Good.
The Steamboat comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
I believe we watched, I can't remember which Hitchcock film we watched together. I know there was one of those in the mix. I was also quite proud of introducing him to Rebecca, which he didn't realize was a Hitchcock film.
Oh, very good. Nice.
So there was some back and forth there.
Yes.
That was fun.
Well, okay, so what were the films besides that you had to share with him?
Ooh. did I make him watch? You know, that's a good question. I don't recall exactly. We've got a DVD collection that is a mess. And I know that we went through quite a few things, like reminiscing together. You've got to, you know, I think
right.
I probably made him watch a fish called Wanda.
Oh.
Which, you know, is just like something I'm super nostalgic about, but isn't, I don't know, the best.
Oh, wait a minute now. Come on. There, summer of 1988, that was the year I graduated high school, and there were two films that I saw in the theater multiple times. One, because I wanted to see it. Second, I went back immediately because I loved it so much. And then there was periods where you had that friend who you hadn't seen it, and you grabbed them by the wrist and you dragged them to the theater and took it to them. One was Midnight Run, and the other was A Fish Called Wanda.
Okay, so I'm talking to a fan.
Oh, totally. Oh, my gosh. I was in my freshman dorm room, and I got really more excited than anybody should be when Kevin Klein won Best Supporting Actor for Fish Called Wanda. I thought it was just absolutely justified and made the night.
Wonderful.
So how old?
That's fantastic.
How old are your kids?
They are, let's see, one just turned 6, and the other is 2, going on 20.
Oh, boy.
they're a lot of fun.
Now, the 6-year-old, my daughter is 20, so I've been down this path. What is there a film that the 6-year-old could watch every day for months on end?
Oh, well, the one he has watched every day for months on end is, hands down, Jurassic Park.
Whoa, okay.
Pretty much any of them. I think the original is a favorite, but we made the mistake of letting him watch that. He's a dinosaur fanatic.
Boys, dinosaurs, I get that. I understand that. Okay. And the 2-year-old hasn't been exposed yet?
He's seen a little of it.
Okay.
But he's not terribly interested. You know, that short attention span works
yes.
in our favor.
Yeah. My daughter, I've told this many times, and now I get to share it with you. There are, as I mentioned, films that they could watch every day. She was smart enough to at least alternate, but for a period of 6 months, she could go back and forth between Finding Nemo and Monsters, Inc. And if you think about all the children-oriented crap that's out there, I think we dodged a major bullet with 2 fine films.
I think you did, too. We also went through a Finding Nemo phase, and I could not have been more grateful.
Oh, that's good. Oh, 2 boys. You're going to hang in there.
Thank you. They're the sweetest kids. I think they're going to be good little
okay.
good little people.
All right. Very good. So, all right, Meredith, once again, let's plug the festival and the website, and let's get some more people down to Bloomington and the website.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really hope you all will join us. Buskirk Chumley Theater in downtown Bloomington, Indiana, March 24th through 27th. You can get tickets at festival.hoosierfilms.com, and we really look forward to seeing everybody. Hope you all come out next week.
Meredith, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's great talking with you.
That was my chat with Meredith McGriff, the CEO of Hoosier Films, and the Hoosier Films Annual Festival is happening Thursday, March 24th through Sunday, March 27th at the Buskirk Chumley Theater, 114 East Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington, Indiana. I'll be a panelist on Saturday morning at 9:30 if you're in that neck of the woods and you're up that early. So HoosierFilms.com/events and HoosierFilms.com for all the good information over there. So thank you, Meredith. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, before we get to what I watched this week and then the grab a pencil portion, want to raise a glass slightly to actor William Hurt, who passed away last week. And I start this by saying, look up what William Hurt did to Marlee Matlin. It's in her autobiography or her memoir. I can't remember which one it is, but she brings it up. Look it up. I revisited, and looking back at his resume, you know, his first film was Altered States, and this was a film that was on HBO constantly back in the day. And don't tell Paddy Chayefsky but I really like Altered States. It's directed by Ken Russell. It's bat spit crazy. It's got some weird visuals that only Russell could pull off, and just a physical performance from William Hurt. And William Hurt's run in the 80s is pretty impressive. Altered States, Eyewitness, which is, I remember seeing in the theater with my dad. I do remember, I believe, Siskel and Ebert on Sneak Previews, back when that was on PBS. They were discussing that film. And by the way, somebody has posted on YouTube a series of old clips from Sneak Previews, and then later Siskel and Ebert, and when Sneak Previews was done by non-Ebert, non-Siskel people. You know who they are. Anyway, there's a slew of those, and it has been fun to revisit those and think about some films that have been up there. In 1981, he appeared in three films, All the Way Home, a TV movie, which I still haven't seen, Eyewitness, and then Body Heat. Yeah, I was 11 when I saw Body Heat. It explains a lot, and I'll sort of leave it at that. The follow-up to that, yeah, I had a huge impact. And I think that was also my first experience with noir. I don't think I'd really watched any of the film noirs, the old black and white ones on TV at that time. I had seen Casablanca with my dad, and I'd seen a couple other, probably some Humphrey Bogart films, but not a straight-out noir, which this was, with Kathleen Turner. The great story, the follow-up to this was when Lynn, my wife, the one who lets me call her Mrs. Soce on the radio, when we went to London as a part of our honeymoon, and while we were in London, there was a stage production of The Graduate with Kathleen Turner as Mrs. Robinson. We saw the poster, the billboard, and my lovely wife, my lovely newlywed, at that time, asked, do you want to see it? And I told her, I don't think that's a good idea on my honeymoon. So, you know, chalk one up for husband. But anyway, so yeah, Body Heat is great. There is it was on HBO, but there was a televised production of A Midsummer Night's Dream that was done in the park, in Central Park in New York. He plays Oberon. Christine Baranski is Titania. There's a few other familiar faces on this. And of course, 1983... he had Gorky Park playing a proper Russian police officer, and Nick in The Big Chill. And The Big Chill is a film I've said many times should be watched every 5 years, because you will get something different out of it over time. I was 13 when that film came out, and what I remember was really good acting, vulnerable adults. And I got the same thing when I saw it again at 18. By the time I was 23, I had a friend in college who had committed suicide. And so that added a different element to it. And getting older and getting married and having children and having a family and jobs. And anyway, you get something out of it, because it's a great example of the art doesn't change, you change. Of course, after Gorky Park, he finally wins an Academy Award for Kiss of the Spider Woman, which is one I need to revisit. His follow-up to that was, he got three Academy Award nominations in a row. One for Kiss of the Spider-Woman, was nominated for Children of a Lesser God. Look up what William Hurt did to Marlee Matlin. Read about her biography. And then Broadcast News, which is another great one. And I'm really, really happy that my daughter got turned on to Broadcast News. She knows as well. But and in my tribute to Hurt as an actor online, I wrote, I really a lot appreciate it. Time of Destiny, which I don't think I ever saw, and then in 1988, finished the decade with The Accidental Tourist. That got Gina Davis an Oscar. It got him to re-team with Kathleen Turner, who's also directed by Lawrence Kasdan. I Love You to Death, that's 1990. It's not like the other Kasdan films. Appeared in Woody Allen's Alice, The Doctor, and then did films that were not necessarily big, but he made them interesting. Trial by Jury, Smoke. I really love Wang Wang's Smoke. Second Best, A Couch in New York, Dark City, The Proposition, Lost in Space. It was interesting. I was talking with a friend whose kids remember him, of course, from either Captain America, or Black Widow, as well as being in The Hulk, as well as The Village. So, Mr. Brooks, yeah. And, of course, his final nomination came from A History of Violence, which only he could pull off that ridiculous accent, but still be scary as hell. So, yeah, there, and yeah, Captain America as a secretary, as Thaddeus Ross, Secretary of State. So there you go. 71 years old, if I remember correctly. Yeah, 71 years old. So salute to William Hurt. Thank you for all of your work. Look up what William Hurt did to Marley Matlin. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We go to IU Cinema, where Tuesday, March 22nd at 7 p.m., it is a virtual screening room edition, a Science on Screen series, the 2018 documentary The Cleaners, National Evening of Science on Screen program, a post-film discussion, Delete, Ignore, Delete, What Happens When Silicon Valley Cleans the Internet. We'll follow this virtual screening. On Thursday, March 24th at 7 o'clock, from 1954, Magnificent Obsession. Friday, March 25th, as a part of the Staff Selects collection from 2008, Speed Racer. Programmed by IU Cinema podcast producer and host and blog contributor David Carter. Oh, boy. Tuesday, March 29th at 7 o'clock, the part of the Science on Screen series, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. The Mountains of Muncie, Indiana, and Richard Dreyfuss in a Ball State shirt. Post-film discussion, Closer Than We Think, Social and Cultural Roots of UFO Conspiracy Theories. Will follow the screening. On Wednesday, March 30th, A Scanner Darkly and the Sound of Science, The Brain, will be happening. Saturday, April 2nd, at 7 o'clock, the world premiere of the film Double Exposure. And Tuesday, April 5th at 7 o'clock, Korea Remixed, Science on Screen, The Host. See this film on a big screen. I was very fortunate to do so, and it's a ride. The post-film discussion, Adapt, Mutate, Survive, The Human Toll on Our Biological Environment, will follow the screening. And finally, Friday, April 8th at 7 o'clock, additional films and guests, experimental series, Human Cannabis 1 and 2. And director Joshing Arthur Liu is scheduled to be present. Over at the Can-Can Cinema, we have I've Heard the Mermaid Singing, Master X, and the animated 2022 Oscar-nominated short films. All that is happening there, as well as the documentaries and the live actions. All of that is happening over at the Can-Can. And at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin, if you get there quickly, tonight at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, the 2005 film version of Pride and Prejudice. That's the one with Keira Knightley and Matthew McFadden, Brenda Blethyn, Donald Sutherland. I love seeing Donald Sutherland in this film. He makes it okay for Austonian men to weep. I appreciate that. Saturday, March 19th at 7:30 p.m., Caddyshack. And then Thursday at 1:30 for seniors only. And then Friday and Saturday, March 25th and 26th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Hoosiers. And then members-only screening Sunday, March 27th at 2 p.m., The Money Pit. And then April 1st and 2nd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Friday and Saturday night, From Russia with Love is happening at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Now, a couple of films I got to watch on video from Film Movement, a Russian-Polish-Belgian co-production called The Whaler Boy. This is set in a whaling community in the Bering Strait. What happens when a 15-year-old boy falls in love with a webcam model? Her tag is Honey Sweet 999. And at the beginning of the film, we get to see her going to work in a small little bedroom. Not her bedroom. It's an office done up like a bedroom. But her going through the hallways and seeing the other coworkers and then setting up the laptop for her job. And then an innocent boy who's being really honest online. Not skeezy, not creepy, but honest. Oh, eventually it gets to that. He had never seen anything like this. So there's a bittersweet aspect to this is he doesn't know any better. He doesn't know how to he knows how to respond, he thinks. And it becomes a bit of an obsession. It doesn't turn into a thriller, but he's 15, and he's a boy, and he's going to get worked up on this. jealousy comes in when he thinks somebody in his whaling community is also watching her online, finds out her address is in Detroit, and tries to make a trip of it. That's also a very bittersweet part. It teeters on getting too silly when he makes his trip. He has not thought it through. And that's kind of the bittersweet aspect of this. So natural performances. I haven't checked to see if these guys were if they were actors or not, or if this was their first film or not. But it is a heartbreaking aspect of somebody who is you're still developing your feelings, and it's just not the right situation. And as a dad and a former 15-year-old boy. I could understand. So yeah, The Whaler Boy, courtesy of Film Movement. Also on IndiePix, a documentary called Sight, The Story of Vision. This is where you find out all you need to know about your eyes, your eyeballs, and the history and the amount of poor vision that is happening in this world. 2.5 billion people with poor vision. Talks about how the eyes are, of course, part of the brain, the brain's relations to the eyes. We get some individual stories on what some folks are going through with their eyes. All of this is narrated by Elton John. It's less than an hour, and I learned more about my eyes than I did probably since school. I wear glasses. I don't like contacts. But we find out about glaucoma and cataracts and stigma, the stigma of how four eyes is gone and how glasses, eyeglasses have become a sense of fashion and a sense of identity. So interesting little short little bit and well done and to the point. Sight, The Story of Vision, courtesy of IndiePix. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. We start on Twitter, where, what was it? Jay Reed writes, it's the 1-2 punch of Don't Look Up and Miami Connection. I'm glad you brought this up. By the way, at DaddyPants1220. Love that. Golden Globus Theater, which is a really fun movie podcast that I got to be a guest on a while back. I listened to their treatment of Miami Connection, which I really enjoyed. I finally got around to watching Don't Look Up. It's not Best Picture material. It just is not. It is a little more subtle than, say, Vice, which was their last the last Adam McKay film that I was disappointed with. Kind of low-hanging fruit on this about who is right and who is not when it comes to the end of the world and looking out for yourself. There are moments the film feels like it's grabbing you by the lapels and shaking you and telling you to laugh. That's a problem. We do get a nice moment at the end of the film involving Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, and a few others when they're just making dinner together, and I'm going to leave it at that. But you know, when you get a kind of one-dimensional performance out of Meryl Streep as a certain president who doesn't think and doesn't care and is only thinking about themselves, we get it. We really get it. So yeah, not Best Picture material. So anyway, thank you, DaddyPants1220. Moving on to Facebook, Lou Harry writes he saw Speed. Joe Shearer writes Spider-Man No Way Home, which I believe is now available on disc for those who want to rent or check it out. Hi, Aunt May. Joe Shearer also watched X, Deepwater, and Fresh. John writes, friends, this is why I do the show, among other things. John writes, per your suggestion about checking out Cagney's other non-gangster movies, Yankee Doodle Dandy. I enjoyed this, and it definitely showcases his other talents, like dancing and singing. He did tap dancing. Yeah, he did. I love Yankee Doodle Dandy. We kind of go back and forth in my house of watching that or 1776 on July 4th. At the very least, the last moment of the film with Cagney on the steps. That's just cool. And then John also writes, with the kids, the Lego movie in the theater and The Land Before Time. Jeff writes, Red Rocket. Todd writes, The Quartermass Experiment, Quartermass 2, and Quartermass and the Pit. Okay. Wayne writes, I've been binging Peaky Blinders all week. John writes, Big Chill, obviously. Lila writes, Turning Red. It was great. My 12-year-old related to it. I like the mom character. She was three-dimensional, and that's important when so many teen movies portray parents as the cool or mean mom. I know. There was a real side to the mom character, and her daughter got to see that vulnerability. Yeah, Lila, I'm with you on that. Same thing with the dad, but no, definitely with moms. And I can't believe folks are complaining about the movie because they couldn't relate to it. It's a cartoon. It's Pixar. That's the whole point. You're supposed to relate to it no matter what the character is. And I'm sorry, if you can't deal with womanhood in your movies, especially something like this, yeah, don't have kids. Or, you know, be a better parent. David writes, we watched all eight Harry Potter movies in prep for our trip to Universal this week. Okay, David, have fun. That's cool. Cassie writes Rasputin and Dark Harbor. Devin writes Turning Red. Rebecca writes, I finally watched Encanto. Dustin writes The General from 1927, Dial M for Murder, Pumping Iron, The Verdict. All right. I'm glad you got to see that, pal. American Playhouse True West from 1984, Twins, Joss Wheaton's Much Ado About Nothing, and Fittest on Earth, A Decade of Fitness. Dustin, I'm glad you got to see Joss Wheaton's Much Ado About Nothing. I use this as a great example of you can watch back-to-back, and I always recommend first Kenneth Branagh's Much Ado with Emma Thompson, Denzel Washington, Keanu Reeves, Kate Beckinsale, Michael Keaton, Robert Sean Leonard. That one's the more traditional look of it. It is period. It is in Italy. It's gorgeous. Joss Whedon, it's like a summer in Italy. And who doesn't turn down that gig? Joss Whedon's, which is in modern clothes, black and white, shot on a really lovely piece of property in Los Angeles. And it feels like a weekend cocktail party. Same story, just different dressing. So I'm glad you got to see that. Nancy writes, Belfast, what a beautiful film. The Paper Chased and Karate Kid 2, and she writes, I napped through part one. It's okay, Nancy. It was just Rocky with karate. Lisa writes, Belfast and Evelyn. Ah, there's your Thursday double feature. Megan writes, Spider-Man No Way Home. I really love the backstories and the redemption of the other Spider-Men. Thank you, Megan. Josh writes, Dune and Bottle Shock. Jeff writes, Candleshoe. Wow, I remember that, 1978 with Jodie Foster. Jeff also watched The Adam Project. Britt writes, The Adam Project. Taylor writes, The Batman, The Illusionist, Some Like It Hot, and The Razor's Edge, deemed Bill Murray's finest role. Yeah, the story was he'd do Ghostbusters if Universal would let him do The Razor's Edge. So there you go. And that's another one I need to revisit. I really wasn't ready for it when I was 14. Eric writes, two pre-code films that were new to me. Hot Saturday from 1932, one of eight films Cary Grant made during his first year in Hollywood. And The Cheat from 1931, a talky remake of a scandalous DeMille silent with a rare film appearance by Tallulah Bankhead. All right. Plus, Criterion's new three-disc Citizen Kane. Beautiful, of course. Purchased on flash sale day and the magnificent final season of The Last Kingdom on Netflix. Way to go, Eric. Thomas writes The Great Debaters. Patty writes Avengers Age of Ultron. Not Silence. Melissa writes Coda and Dune. Tracy Forner writes High Fidelity, The Untouchables, Varsity Blues, Boogie Nights, and Die Hard with a Vengeance, and then ask the question, can you tell the missus isn't home? I kind of do with that list, Tracy, even if you didn't watch Autofocus. That's an inside joke between Tracy and me. If you see me on the street, I'll tell you about it. Jolene writes, Free Guy and the Batman. Dee Dee Sorvino, Drinks with Dee Dee. Check out her podcast as well. This week was Ireland and Iceland, and I get to be a part of that. Dee Dee watched House of Gucci. Also, if you see her page, you might see clips of her husband, the great Paul Sorvino, singing Danny Boy. I'll tell this story. I was on her show last year, and sometimes Paul makes an appearance in the show. Sometimes he doesn't. He's a busy man. And we were discussing St. Patrick's Day last year, and near the end of the show, I got the gumption to ask Paul to sing Danny Boy to close out the show. And he said normally it takes him about 20 minutes to warm up for such a song, but he did it anyway. And that's about as starstruck, nerd, geeky, as I can get. So thank you, Paul, and thank you, Dee Dee. Gary writes, Say Anything, Jerry Maguire, and Almost Famous. Aaron writes, Dune. Andrea writes, The Adam Project and Fault in Our Stars. Tom writes, Almost Famous, The Big Lebowski, and Captain Blood. Daniel writes, Snake Pit and The Most Beautiful Boy in the World. Robert Muggy, man, he's got a list. Here we go. The Age of Innocence, which is a Scorsese film, and I also refer to it as a Scorsese film that Twitter film bros will not watch. Plus a whole lot of Paramount pre-code films on the Criterion Channel. Design for Living, Ladies Man, Torch Singer, Kiss and Make Up, I'm No Angel, Million Dollar Legs, Merrily We Go to Hell, The Coconuts, Hot Saturday, International House, The Virtuous Sin, and The Devil is Driving. I love watching early sound films as filmmakers struggle to tell stories largely through dialogue, record audio while working with large, noisy cameras, and freely exploring racy subject matter that would soon be off limits. That's right, Robert. So yeah, if you get a chance, check out some of those pre-code films. You'll clutch your pearls. Dylan writes, I introduced Julie to yet another pop culture milestone, The Running Man. Okay. Yep. Yes, you did. Okay. Stephanie writes, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Doug writes, Cops from Buster Keaton. Cry the Beloved Country, 1951. Stalag 17. Victor Victoria. Howard's End. As Good as It Gets. Who is Harry Nilsson and why is everybody talking about him? And a rewatch of Encanto. Thank you, Doug. Elaine writes Contagion and adds the protocols and societal reactions to the pandemic in comparison to COVID-19. Spot on, almost deja vu. Yep, and I still haven't watched it since COVID hit, so I'm okay with that. But I did watch Panic in the Streets. You should check that out. Kim writes Coach Carter and Central Intelligence. Stephanie writes The Devil's Own. Up next, Michael Collins, then The Fugitive, then The Quiet Man, St. Patrick's Day tradition. And yes, I consider The Fugitive to be a proper St. Paddy's Day film just because there's a parade and Richard Kimball runs away from it. Let's not turn this into a diehard debate. Moving on. Keith writes Scarface, Wind Talkers, All Three Godfathers, Ronin, Flyboys, Honest Thief, The Handmaiden, and The 355. Stephen writes Sins of the Fleshapoids. Kevin writes about Schmidt. Robin writes My Brilliant Career. It's still brilliant. Yes, it is, Robin. Really good. Kurt. Okay, Kurt is a part of Drinks with Dee Dee's podcast, and yesterday he was on as a guest in Iceland, which was part of the show. His Beltrace movie night selection was What's Up, Doc? Very good. Andrew writes all three Ghostbusters, The Mummy, and The Mummy Returns. Those are the Brendan Fraser ones, of course. Linda writes Gucci, House of Gucci, Encanto, Tea with the Dames, and wants to see Shaq's documentary. Allison writes The Adam Project. Michael writes Spencer, Mulholland Falls, Vivarium, Along Came Jones, Too Late for Tears, and Hangmen Also Die. Ronald writes The Big Country, The Green Mile, and The Field. Ah, really good Richard Harris performance from director Jim Sheridan. Terry writes Journey to Italy, The Man from Laramie, and Les Vampires, Parts 1 and 2. Jessica writes The Adam Project, In the Heights, and Wonder Woman 1984. John writes Hamburger Hill. Andrew writes Free Guy and Reminiscence. James writes From Russia with Love and the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Austin of Medium Cool Podcast writes The Batman, The Bad Sleep Well, and Ron. And if you go to his Medium Cool Podcast, you can hear him and myself discussing the Akira Kurosawa Shakespeare trilogy of The Bad Sleep Well, Ron, and Throne of Blood. So check those out. Chris writes A Mighty Wind. William writes The Original Nightmare Alley. Bonnie writes The Adam Project and The Proposal. Jared writes Darby O'Gill and The Little People. That happens this week. Kevin writes Belfast for the second time. And finally, David writes Tick, Tick, Boom. And that's what you've been watching, friends. So thank you. I hope you got to see some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!